You want it. You need it. It's what everyone's talking about. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
I'm here. Aaron's here. It's a Friday. Lots going on, especially since the podcast ended yesterday regarding Trent Williams. We're going to get to all of that. Ben Standing's going to join us on the show today. And wanted to start by mentioning mybookie.ag. You know, we're tournament time of year right now, into March Madness. If you don't have a place to wager and you want to wager, I'm telling you, mybookie.ag is a place you can trust. Totally reliable. They will have the ability to bet, you know, brackets, you know, put money on futures bets on the Final Four teams, national champion, bet on individual games. They've got it all. MyBookie's got you covered. If you go to mybookie.ag today and deposit and use my promo code KevinDC, you'll get a 50% bonus on that deposit. That's mybookie.ag, promo code Kevin DC. All right, I wanted to start real quickly because we're going to get to all the Trent Williams stuff and Ben Standing's going to join us, etc. With Peyton Manning to Monday Night Football as a possibility. A lot of reporting about Peyton Manning being paid or being offered by ESPN between $18 and $20 million a year to go do Monday Night Football. And the other part of this story, Aaron, I don't know if you've been following it, is the possibility that ESPN goes out and gets Al Michaels.
Yes.
And that would move Tirico into the Sunday night booth with Collinsworth and then have Al Michaels be paired with Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I don't think Peyton Manning's coming back to work with Joe Tessitore. That is my guess. I could be wrong on that. You know, there was reporting early on that if Tirico had stayed at ESPN, that Peyton Manning would have worked with Tirico.
Yes.
I think they're going to have to get an Al Michaels type. I've always been a huge Al Michaels fan. I really have been. I think that he's coming towards the end of his career, more likely than not. He's 75 years old. Looks great for 75. But that would be a Monday Night Football booth that, you know, football fans could get excited about. You know, I'd like to hear Peyton Manning call games. I think it would be very interesting. At the same time, and I think we talked about this the other day, I'm not watching a game based on the broadcast team. I watch games because either I'm interested in the game or I'm interested in the action that I might have on the game. And nothing in the broadcast booth impacts that. Although, again, we've been irritated a lot by Tessitore and Booger McFarland in the last few years, you know, and Jason Witten when he was a part of it. So clearly we were, you know, as fans impacted, or a lot of us were, by the booth. And maybe it's just because it was a little bit over the top. And it seemed sort of small time. But good God, $18 to $20 million a year. You know, according to guys like Michael McCarthy and Andrew Marchand and others, to be in the Monday night booth.
Be awesome for Peyton. I'm more interested in the trading for Al Michaels part, and what would Disney give up to NBC Universal to get Al Michaels?
Well, did you see that actually there was talk of like people, like actual ESPN broadcasters.
You know what NBC traded for Al Michaels originally, right? Because that was technically a trade as well. They had to give up pieces to
I don't remember. Tell me.
It was the main piece was the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which was the predecessor to, I believe, Bugs Bunny or Mickey. No, it was the predecessor to Mickey Mouse.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What is
so when Al Michaels went to NBC from ABC, he was still technically under contract to ABC.
Okay.
They
because okay, so now we're going back to 2002 when NBC got Sunday Night Football.
It was after that, right? Because it was when. So maybe it wasn't 2002, was it? I thought
it was early in the two. It was early 2000s.
I thought it was mid 2000s. But anyway,
you might be right.
Whenever it was, yes, we're talking about that. He was still under contract to ABC, Disney, all that at the time.
2006, he worked at ABC Sports until 2006.
So 2006. So yes, he was still technically under contract, but with the move of Sunday Night Football, he had requested permission, and NBC had requested permission for him to get out of his contract, do that. Disney asked for several things in response, and one of them was the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which was the predecessor to Mickey Mouse.
I knew nothing about that.
Yeah.
How much was Oswald the Lucky Rabbit worth?
I have no idea. Apparently Al Michaels.
I do remember when Al Michaels was doing NBA games on ABC and did not like doing NBA games. You could tell he was not, and he was getting paid a lot of money to do the NBA games in the early 2000s. So if he was at ABC until 2006, he was doing the NBA games on ABC, some of those ABC NBA finals, you know. And really, NBC had the NBA for a long time. You know, and to me, when I think about the NBA, I think about CBS in the 70s and 80s with Dick Stockton and Bill Russell, or Dick Stockton and Rick Barry, and, you know, various other, you know, iterations with Dick Stockton. Dick Stockton was like the voice of the NBA on CBS, you know, if you go back to the 1980s. Yeah, that's it, Aaron. Yeah, this is NBA in the 80s on CBS. This is what it sounded like.
For the Boston Celtics, it has been the kind of year teams dream about. Nightly clinics on how the game should be played. The architect, Larry Bird, arguably the NBA's best all-round performer. But Bird's 30 points took a backseat to the clutch second-half shooting of Dennis Johnson in the Celtics' first game playoff victory.
This is when the NBA was awesome. Celtics Lakers in the finals every year. That was great that you pulled that up. See if you can pull up the 90s, because then we went from the 80s to the 90s when it was on NBC, and that's the era of Michael Jordan and obviously Marv Albert as the lead play-by-play voice. That's it. That's the NBC open.
NBA on NBC. The 1997 NBA Playoffs. Tonight, Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah. So that was the 90s. That's what you had going on in the 90s. I can't remember when ABC took over the NBA Finals in the early 2000s when Al Michaels was doing play-by-play, but it sucked. And so did some of those series, too. You know, I remember, like, Detroit, San Antonio. I mean, and Al Michaels, you could tell, did not want to do NBA games. And I think one of the reasons, ultimately, he went to NBC and what he was happy about, I think he was happy to get out of the responsibility of the NBA, which, you know, Michaels is a much bigger hockey fan than he is an NBA fan. You know that, right? He's got season tickets to the LA Kings games.
Yes.
Like, he's a massive hockey guy. Anyway, I guess I don't even know where we're going with this after playing those wonderful opens to the NBA.
You're just getting a little nostalgic.
Well, I mean, truly, the NBA in the 80s, for me, Bird and Magic and those in the Sixers and Moses Malone and those games and those series, it was great. I mean, it was phenomenal. I don't know if the NBA's actually ever been better than it was then for some of us. But anyway, you know, there are other, you know, they've got to be able to, there's another play-by-play guy somewhere that they could team up with Peyton Manning.
Well, but it might be a situation
where... What about Brad Nessler? Why can't Nessler, you know they're losing the SEC,
yeah,
CBS.
It might be a situation where, and I mean, you would think he would like Nessler, but be with the SEC ties, but the question would be, you know, who specifically does, it might be a situation where Peyton says, look, I want, you know, Al Michaels. I want someone who's seasoned in the NFL. I want someone like that.
Right off the top of your head, other than the number one guys, okay, Joe Buck at Fox, Jim Nantz at CBS, Al Michaels at NBC, okay, and we don't count Tessitore. Who is your favorite announcer that could step in to a big-time Monday night booth with Peyton Manning and you'd be fine with it? I got a couple of guys.
I really like Ian Eagle.
I think Ian Eagle's very good. I don't know if he's the big chair guy.
No.
The number one guy.
Probably not, but I really like Ian Eagle.
Brad Nessler would be my number one, and he would be available because when I say he'd be available, I don't know what – with CBS losing the SEC to ABC ESPN, I don't know if people knew that or not, but that's happening, which, by the way – I'm going to miss the SEC on CBS.
Yes.
But I Nessler would be near the top of my list. Kevin Harlan, by the way, would not be. And I know that this would be something that maybe Peyton Manning wouldn't want, or maybe ESPN wouldn't want. But I'm going to tell you right now that regardless of the relationship that he had with John Gruden, Sean McDonough flat out is great at everything he does. He is excellent at everything he does. And I enjoyed him doing Monday Night Football. He's probably better doing college football and college basketball and having all these other things. And then there's one other guy that I actually think has been pretty good over the in recent years, and that's Andrew Catalan, who's been doing games on CBS, who's actually a damn good play-by-play guy, as is Spiro Dedes, who's been doing games for CBS as well. He's pretty good, too. Dan Shulman is phenomenal, but he doesn't really do football. You know, has Shulman done football? He does baseball and basketball, pretty much.
I mean, he might have done a little bit of football here and there, but not that I know.
I mean,
of.
You know he would be yes. phenomenal in that chair.
Sure. I assume so. Again, I don't know if he can do...
Because we don't know him for football.
But, right. But presumably, yes.
Yeah. Did you know that Shulman's Canadian?
Yes.
Yeah. Peyton Manning, $18 to $20 million. He'll end up, if he wants to do this, with a contract that'll either match or exceed Tony Romo's contract, and we'll get to see that. Before we bring Ben Standing in for a conversation about the Trent Williams news, etc. The Caps lost again last night to the Rangers. I watched some of that game last night. They lost 6-5 in overtime, and this dude Mika Zibanejad had 5 goals, including the game winner in overtime. He became just the second player in NHL history to score 5 goals, with one of the 5 being an overtime game winner. And the last one to do it was Sergei Fedorov against the Capitals as well back in 1996. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know why the Caps are playing poorly and whether or not, you know, they can turn it on when the postseason starts. We know the postseason doesn't really mirror at all in this particular sport the regular season. I just know that people that know hockey are really concerned about them defensively. And they're also concerned about sort of the, you know, not that Todd Reardon isn't the right coach or a good coach, but that he is a bit softer on his players than Trotsky was. It's still really remarkable that Barry Trotz won this franchise's only Stanley Cup and then didn't come back and coach the team to try to defend that title. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, there is a possibility that the Caps could end up playing the Islanders in the first round of the NHL playoffs. They're tied with Philadelphia now atop the Metropolitan Division, and the Penguins are three points back. Right now, it could be the Penguins, too. It could be the Penguins, it could be the Islanders, it could be the Blue Jackets. There are a lot of possibilities here, but I think that would be pretty intriguing, don't you think, to see a Barry Trotz versus the Caps in a first-round series?
That would certainly be a story.
Yeah, that would be pretty fun to see. Last thing before we get to Ben Standing. So, last night I had to run out real quickly, and I ran into a guy that I know, sort of, and he listens to the podcast all the time, listens to the radio show, too, and you can listen to the radio show. I'm on the Team 980 again, 7 to 10 a.m. It's been 6 months now that I've been back on radio. Team980.com, Team 980 app, and we're also on an FM station, too, in D.C., 95.9 FM, 7 to 10 a.m. And he said something to me last night that... It's not the first time people have said this to me in the past, and I guarantee you Tommy's heard this as well, because he and I have talked about it before. But he said, man, you and Tommy were really after each other yesterday. Do you guys like each other? And it's funny, because we've both heard that over the years. And I just wanted to say, and, you know, he's not here, and I've said it to his face before, and I'll say it again the next time we're together. I can tell you that in the 11 years... that I have known Tom well, all right? We started our show together in 2009, our midday show, and it went for about seven and a half years. I can honestly say that not one time have we ever left the studio after a show and been mad at one another. Swear on my children, it's never happened once. I can't remember... with Tommy ever having a legitimate sort of serious argument. We've debated after shows. We've argued about things, you know, with respect to, you know, the show. and other things, politics and other things. I cannot remember one time ever leaving the studio mad or upset. And I think he would say the same thing. And there have been times during the show where we've really gotten after each other, and I don't even remember doing it yesterday, did we? I can't even remember what the topic would have been. But it's not the first time I've heard this before. But I promise all of you, by the way, I had the same relationship with Cooley, the exact same relationship with Cooley, even when we argued. Actually, that's not true. There was one time where we really were angry. He was very angry at me after a particular show and something I said on a show at training camp one year that got him very, very upset. And within 5 minutes of having a conversation about it, we were both over it and we moved on. And I can't remember ever having that. I know a lot of guys that work together in this business that don't like each other, that, you know, don't spend time with each other, that, you know, when they're done, there are hurt feelings. And they, you know, and sometimes that works on the air, you know, the next day. But I'm just telling you that the relationship I've had with Tom, even when it is sounded on certain shows that we're after each other and we're pissed off with each other, I can't ever once remember being mad at him at the end of the show or upset or hurt. You know, there just have never really been, I think he would agree with this, there have never really been hurt feelings between the two of us after, you know, 2 to 3 hours, sometimes 4 hours in the podcast format, more like an hour to an hour and a half of, you know, sometimes disagreeing vehemently on really, you know, non-life impacting subjects. You know, at the end of the day, most of the shit that we talk about really is not life altering or life impacting. Although I will mention to you, Aaron, because I told Greg this morning that I did wake up with a bit of a sore throat. And there were 3 reported coronavirus positive tests in Montgomery County. Now, I don't think it's coronavirus. I'm pretty sure it isn't. And I feel great. I just took a couple of Advil and felt great. Greg's like, well, why are you at work? I actually didn't feel the sore throat. I didn't wake up with it, really. I sort of felt it driving in. You know, if I thought I had coronavirus, I wouldn't go to work. I wouldn't be that selfish. I wouldn't be. But I have never been, and Aaron's not this person either, I've learned here over, you know, a year and a half now, that, you know, we're not the kind of people that, you know, with sniffles or a cold, we're going to miss work. Tommy has showed up Tommy always has the sniffles and always has a cold or always has something, but he almost always posts. But anyway, yeah, I love him and respect him dearly. So even if you hear us at each other's throats in a show, trust me, we don't feel that way when the show's over. There's never really been a harsh word after a show. I can't remember one anyway. All right, we got to get to this Trent Williams stuff, and we're going to bring in Ben Standing to do that. Ben, of course, writes for The Athletic, and I would urge all of you to subscribe to The Athletic if for any other reason than to be able to read Ben and his reporting and opinion on the Redskins at The Athletic. Follow Ben on Twitter, of course. You can follow him at Ben Standing. All right. I have not gotten to the Trent Williams news from yesterday, so you and I will have one of those conversations here over the next 15-plus minutes about this and other things. Ben's got some reporting on it as well, but let me just catch everybody up to speed. I'm assuming that many people that listen to the podcast know that yesterday the Redskins gave Trent Williams the opportunity to seek a trade, per sources. I think Diana Russini broke the news. I could have that wrong, but a lot of people followed up with confirmation of that. And so we have reached a point in which we now know that, you know, for the first time officially, that the Redskins are certainly open to trading him. I would urge everybody to understand the following. You know, just because they've given him permission to seek a trade doesn't mean that it will happen. I think it will, and the odds are it will, but the only way it does happen is if he finds a team willing to pay him what he wants, and at the same time, simultaneously, gives the Redskins something they want. That's how it works here. You know, Trent Williams doesn't go out. He finds a team. They agree on a contract, and then the team says, hey, I'll give you guys a fifth-round pick. And then it ends. That's not the way it works. It's two sort of, you know, individual exclusive events. Trent's got to agree on a contract, long-term contract extension with a new team. And then the Redskins and that team have to agree on the compensation for him. Let's start with that, because there are several things that I'd like to get into with you on this topic. But what do you think, first of all, what do you think precipitated this? Was it just a lack of an ability to realistically get a contract done with him? Or is it the new people in Ashburn, Ron Rivera, you know, et cetera, saying, you know what, it's time to move on from him?
So, I mean, it's probably a combination of things. I mean, obviously the new regime did not, you know, for me, the coaching staff with Rivera, you know, they're inheriting this issue. They did not live through the drama like the organization did and the rest of us did last year. So I don't know how much you can say they're looking at it with clean eyes or fresh eyes, but they probably are to some degree. And, you know, looking at it, Trent Williams, you know, I've reported this, others have as well, that he's looking for a contract that would make him one of the highest, if not the highest paid, offensive tackle in the league. We're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, $18 to $20 million, depending on how the market shakes out this year. That's a lot of money for a guy who hasn't played since 2018, injury history. He's obviously one of the better tackles when healthy, but that's a massive commitment to make when you're when you're Ron Rivera at this point, just starting out. And look, obviously you got to have a left tackle. That's kind of a big deal, especially when you have the rookie but the young quarterback in Dwayne Haskins. But, to me, it seems like Trent's side appears to be pretty set in wanting to get that kind of deal. And it just does seem like a lot of money for where the Redskins are right now. I think the Redskins are going to be aggressive in free agency and try to make some moves to I don't want to say win now like they're going for the Super Bowl, but I think they're going to try to be, you know, in play this year for maybe even the playoffs, which would mean sort of keeping Trent Williams. But at the same point, that's a lot of money to ask, and you know, I don't think the Redskins also want to go overboard with how much they're investing. So, you know, I think the money is definitely a big factor. Then, you know, like I said, the new regime—they're not tied to Trent Williams the way the previous group was, for better or for worse.
Do you think there's any possibility that I tend to agree with you that more likely than not, it's a price tag too high? I would also add to that that Trent may be willing to lower that price tag a bit. To move on to a different team. You know, if he's truly demanding, you know, as J.P. Finley told us, a number that would basically make people, you know, sick to their stomach, then in Washington, I think maybe he'd be willing to come off that number a little bit to move elsewhere. First of all, do you agree with that?
Well, so, like, you know, my thought was, even after they fired Bruce Allen and Larry Hess, the head trainer, and then when Rivera was hired, we started hearing some signs of potential thawing. My question was, where's Trent Williams at with Dan Snyder?
Because yes.
when he made those comments to us in the locker room that day, he praised Dan Snyder. He said a lot of nice things, but as time progressed, when the Redskins put him on the list and said he can't come back to play last year, his tone then started to turn towards the owner. And, you know, it's definitely possible that the thawing never happened. You know, indications I had where it's not like the Redskins are saying, it's not like Trent Williams is saying, hey, I want to come back, and the Redskins saying, nah, go seek a trade. I think Trent Williams is like, oh, cool, let's do this. And like, I have a story, by the time this is out, I have a story up on The Athletic about this whole angle. I polled other writers within The Athletic to cover NFL teams to see where they think the interest might lie around the league, and I had a source give me a couple of specific teams that are kicking those tires. I think Trent Williams, signs point to him wanting out. So it's, I think, you know, I don't know about the money aspect. I mean, even if it's the top of the market as we know it, 18, 19 million, I don't know if that makes me run away and hide, but at the same point, it's just a lot of money for his exact situation. And maybe he does take a smaller number to play somewhere else. I can imagine that. But at the same point, I'm sure he wants to get paid because he still thinks he is one of, if not the best, tackle in the league.
I think you brought up a really interesting point, which I've discussed many times over the last couple of months, and that is we know that Trent Williams hated Bruce Allen and didn't trust Bruce Allen and Larry Hess, et cetera. The thought was when he came back that the relationship with Dan Snyder was still close because he spoke to that. But I think, and I've always felt sort of gut feel, and based on a couple of conversations that weren't concrete in this area, but sort of led me to believe that it was more than just Bruce Allen in the organization that really was unhappy with Trent and the way this was handled and the things that were said. And, you know, that it could have even gone to the level of feeling betrayed a little bit. You know, this was an owner who stood by Trent through two suspensions, gave him a contract extension. They were loyal to him, you know, when a lot of other teams may not have been. Now, of course, the talent and the production, you know, put him in a position to take the chance, roll the dice, and be loyal, because when he was there and healthy and playing, he was one of the best. Maybe not the best, but certainly one of the best. And that, you know, a lot of the conversation when this confrontation sort of became public, you know, with Trent speaking through, you know, a surrogate, so to speak, guys like D'Angelo Hall and Santana Moss and others, and these accusations against the organization came about medical and about irresponsibility and about, you know, essentially, you know, borderline lacking in sort of compassion and care for the player. I think that they were really angry. We know Bruce was. He was pissed off, you know, and it's one of the reasons that Les Carpenter wrote, they want to see him bleed, you know, in this thing, figuratively. So I think you are spot on in mentioning the owner in this. You know, I don't know that the owner necessarily was, you know, all on board, you know, now that Bruce and Larry were gone, that Trent's a great guy and we got to make it right with Trent. I think he felt burned by Trent too.
You know, one thing that's always interesting to me is, you know, how much, you know, the outside world, you know, can bash on Dan Snyder for all kinds of things for the last, that have happened over the last two decades. But when you ask a lot of the former players, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, Fred Smoot goes on, you know, your station a lot, and you talk to other players on or off the record. They often praise the owner. They may bag on other parts of the organization, but they often will praise the owner. I'm constantly baffled as to why. But I would imagine, look, I suspect that Dan Snyder, based on what we kind of know about him, is probably pretty loyal to a lot of the star players.
Star players. Yeah.
Right. Maybe, and there may be a couple out there, maybe like one in Minnesota who would disagree with me. But like
there are
general,
a few others. There are probably a few others too. But to your point, yes. I mean, we both, you know, spend time with these guys. I've spent time, a lot of time with Clinton, and obviously a ton of time with Cooley. You know, and there were, you know, star players that. That's not, and this was has been part of the problem of his ownership, right? Is that he has sort of, you know, treated some of these players as close friends, and sometimes that's gotten in the way of the relationship that the coaches had with the players and the ability to coach certain players because of the relationship he's had with some of these people.
Yeah. I mean, I always point to Clinton Portis and Jim Zorn, that when Clinton Portis,
right,
when Jim Zorn tried to get him to practice hard or whatever it was. And Zorn, or Portis went to the owner, and that was pretty much the end of the Jim Zorn era. To me, swinging gate plays aside.
RG3 Snyder is the all-time sort of sabotaging of the situation.
Absolutely. And so with Trent Williams, you know, it clearly seems like, yeah, right, I agree that you could look at it that the owner is like, oh, hold on, I kind of do a lot of things right by you, and this, and you, I mean, you know, there were so many things that happened this past season, and being at the combine the other day, and a lot of the other reporters were there, we were all kind of like reflecting on the season over and over again. The Trent Williams interview in the locker room, where he just comes in and just rips on everything for half an hour, having not talked for months, was the bizarro moment of the season. That was the moment where we're like, oh my God, I still can't believe that happened. And, you know, to trash on them in the building to boot. Again, he said nice things about the owner, but he ripped on the organization. So, yeah, I ultimately, not to keep belaboring this point, but, yeah, I do think there is something to be said for it. It did go beyond the Bruce Allen of it all, and that the ownership may have decided, you know what, I tried to do right, and that didn't work out. So we're not going to give you that kind of money. We're good here.
All right, we're talking to Ben Standig. Trent Williams has been given permission to seek a trade. There are several teams that have not only a need but significant cap space to make a move. Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer in Cleveland, I had her on the radio show earlier today. She thinks the Browns will certainly explore Trent Williams as a possibility. They did that last year, and there are other teams as well. You said that you've got some information on some teams coming out in your story. I want everybody to read the story, but let me take a guess on some of those teams, because I sort of put together a list of the teams with need and with plenty of cap space, and by the way, with sort of the ammunition that the Redskins, might be interested in in terms of compensation for trading him. I'll start with this. Clearly, the Miami Dolphins not only have a need, but they've got the most cap space. I would assume that some of your sources said that Miami is one of the potential players for Trent Williams.
So I didn't hear anything about Miami specifically from a league source, as it were. As I mentioned, what I did starting yesterday was I went to all the beat writers who cover teams for The Athletic and said, here's the deal. No chance, slim chance, real chance. What's your take on whether your team is interested in Trent Williams? Our Miami reporter came back to me and said he sees no chance.
Really?
He said basically from a timeline perspective that Miami is still effectively in trust the process mode, and that adding 32-year-old Trent Williams for that kind of money would go against that. Now, I could make the argument for it if you're going to draft Tua or some quarterback with the fifth pick, having an established player like Trent Williams on that side would make sense. Last year they traded Laremy Tunsil away. They definitely need tackle. In doing mock drafts, I projected them to draft a tackle with one of their three first-round picks. And they do have clearly the assets to make a move without even probably feeling a dent in their draft capital right now. But it is fair to say that if Miami is still viewing this as a long-term project, that acquiring Trent Williams and he wants a big extension would kind of go against that. So that's the way our Miami writer viewed the situation.
All right, let me go with the next one, because essentially you've given me an indication that, the team that I'm going to guess on has to have this sense that they're close, that they've got a chance to compete for something. Not only that, but they've got the need and they also have the cap space. So Cleveland would be on that list.
It would be for me. Our writer was, he didn't dismiss that. Look, last year, John Dorsey, when he was the general manager, they were pretty kind of open about wanting to acquire Trent Williams, and obviously the Redskins decided they didn't want to make that move. And it's fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see when this is over, by the way, what kind of haul they do get, and how do we potentially compare it to what things we all heard.
Well, you and I are going to disagree on that.
We are.
You and I are going to disagree on that, and John and I are going to disagree on that. But I will, and we'll never perhaps know for sure. I can just tell you, I will not believe my Redskins sources when it comes to what they could have gotten for Trent last year.
I hear. So all that said, Cleveland. So now because John Dorsey's out, new management, or new approach. They definitely, though, need to protect Baker Mayfield still. They have a second round pick that the Redskins, that to me seems like a reasonable range to consider. So, that to me would make a lot of sense. And I saw Mary Kay's report. So, I think that does make sense. I will say, just because I don't want you to guess 30 teams, the teams that I was mentioned would not have been teams that I would have thought of.
Then don't tell me. I want to guess.
Oh, well, I won't. But I was like, just the other part of the exercise is, and admittedly, maybe this is, I'm springing this on all these beat writers, and it's not like they're sitting around there like you and I are thinking about Trent Williams all the time. But based on just looking at that, I don't know if there's that many places. Like, we can imagine there's some contenders who hypothetically need a left tackle. But, this is a draft where there could be seven tackles picked in the first round.
Understood.
you know, and Jason Peters just got thrown out into the mix. It's not a great free agent class, but Jason Peters just got thrown into that mix yesterday. So I think at least the people who are covering these teams, I think, are feeling cautious about saying, yeah, they go all in on giving up a good pick and giving Trent Williams a ton of money.
Philadelphia.
No, I mean, they when Jason Peters got cut, my initial thought, having not, again, similar to this, I wasn't thinking about the Eagles. Was
they
like,
drafted
oh,
Dillard in 19, but still, you could argue that they're not totally convinced, and they have cap space.
Right. So when that happened, when the Peters news came out, I immediately put on my mock draft hat and said, oh, maybe we need to consider Philadelphia tackle in round one, because it felt like people, the reporting out of Philly has been like, Dillard, I don't know. But, you know, subsequently it seems like, you know, okay, but they did this to let Dillard, give Dillard the shot. So I would be surprised if they let Jason Peters, you know, somewhat of a Philly legend, go to then bring in Trent Williams with that money when they traded up last year to get Dillard in the first round. I'm imagining they're going to give Dillard that shot. Plus, the highest paid tackle in the league is currently their right tackle,
Lane Johnson.
So that would just be a ton of money.
Okay, so you said it's not necessarily somebody that we would guess. We would guess Cleveland. We would guess Miami. We would guess the Jets. We would guess maybe either the Giants or the Eagles. We would just, I think I said the Browns. We might guess the Broncos. How about the Texans?
I think if we were playing, like, you know, Marco Polo, you're yelling Marco, my Polo would be getting close to your eardrums at this point. Yeah, I mean, I think the Texans are interesting because they made a massive trade last year to get Laremy Tunsil, one of those best tackle candidates.
Right.
But it's a weird spot now because Tunsil, I mean, they give up a lot to get him, so you think they're going to have to keep him. But now Tunsil, he just fired his agent. He's in the process of getting a new agent, I presume. And the reports out there are he's wanting a new contract that would make him the highest paid tackle, upwards of $20 million. You know, numbers that maybe would make you, you know, whatever you were saying before that JP said about Trent, numbers that would make you kind of blanch. You know, look, Trent Williams is from Houston. I don't know if the Texans care about that. But, you know, I don't know enough about the Tunsil situation, but it seems like they could be headed towards a protracted contract dispute. And if that were to be the case, you know, hey, it would be weird to give up on a guy you just traded all these assets for. But if you give Trent Williams the money instead, it's basically like having just traded for Trent Williams, right?
So, yeah, except for the age difference.
Except for the age difference, for sure. So the Texans would be a team. Again, it doesn't totally make sense because you just acquired Tunsil, but at the same point, if he wants to play hardball, I believe I looked at his contract. I think they can get out of it fairly easily if they wanted to, which is not something they would presumably want to. That you could make that move. So, yeah, I mean, I think Houston's a team to keep an eye on.
All right, I'm going to guess one more, and then you can just tell us, because you said I was getting warmer. And, again, I'm now trying to guess teams that we wouldn't have initially thought of. Because what I did last night was go through, all right, who has a legitimate left tackle need and who's got the cap space? And then, by the way, who's got enough dry powder, you know, trade-wise, compensation-wise, to sort of give the Redskins something that would make sense? I wouldn't take less than a second and an early second, somewhere in the top 10 to 12 of the second round, and we'll get to that next. And that led me to think of Cleveland, Miami, the Jets, the Giants, the Eagles, the Bills, you know, a couple of other teams, the Chargers, the Broncos. So I'm now going down the list here, and I'm going to give you one last guess. God, I just Arizona.
I'll just say, for the purposes of slight teasing, I won't confirm or deny, but I think that's a very interesting call. They did just spend money to retain DJ Humphreys, their tackle. But, you know, when you look at mock drafts, they're constantly projected as a team that could take one of those interesting young tackles with their first round pick. And look, protecting Kyler Murray has got to be, you know, priority number one for them. So would it be weird to spend good money on DJ Humphreys? I think it was like a 3-year, $45 million deal for him. And Trent Williams, maybe, but, you know, maybe not, considering Kyler Murray. Like, you know, he's kind of small. You gotta protect him. So, yes, I would just say that Arizona is a team, another team to keep an eye on.
Well, who did I miss? Who's the big one that I missed?
No, you're
Arizona's
the one. Arizona's okay. A good one.
Okay.
I gotta leave a little mystery.
Maybe the other parts of the mystery could be filled in by, say, the Patriots. See, here's the problem with, like, you know, I had a bunch of, we took a lot of calls this morning on the show, and, you know, I love people who will, you know, hit me with Minnesota and Stephon Diggs. I'm like, dude, they don't have any cap space. Trent wants a massive deal. You know, they can't do that. And by the way, the trading of Stephon Diggs, for people that don't understand this, there's still enough money, you know, bonus money there that's not base that would accelerate with a trade. I don't see Diggs getting traded. And I'll add one more point to this, and this is based on a conversation or two. I don't think that Ron Rivera and company want, you know, want somebody like Stephon Diggs. You know, Diggs hasn't been an off-the-field issue. But, you know, I don't think these blow-ups on the sidelines with Diggs, especially the one in the playoff game at New Orleans, I don't think they've served him well. In terms of the way he's viewed, I think he's a great player, and I don't know why Minnesota would want to deal him. They were highly productive, he and Kirk, last year together. I think Diggs was among the leaders in receptions per, you know, the yards per catch last year, and they didn't even have Thielen on the other side. If they have them both back next year, they've got a chance. But look, the next part of this conversation is what the Redskins should accept coming back. I'm going to tell you what I think, and then I want you to respond to it. You know, the compensatory pick, if they lost him next year, if he remained with the team, would be around a third-round pick, correct?
I think that's right.
Okay, so I'm not taking less than a second. You know, this is business now. You know, you can have compassion for him, and if you feel like an apology is necessary for anything you did wrong organizationally, you can go ahead and apologize to him and his agent. But this is, you know, business now. The Redskins do not have to trade him. They do have leverage here. He's under contract for one more year, a year he does not want to miss. You know, he wants to be traded. He wants to get this contract done. I would not take less than a second. And to be honest with you, I don't know that I'd take a second that's towards the middle or the back half of the second round. I'm looking for where Arizona is in the second round. They have number 40 overall. That would be acceptable to me. You know, to take that second at 40 overall, you know, you're only 6 or 7 spots away from the pick you gave up to Indianapolis to get into the first round last year to get Montez Sweat. Cleveland's pick is one after that at 41, but I'm not taking less than a second rounder. If somebody's saying, you know what, we got to pay him $20 million a year, we're just not giving up more than a third, then you're not getting him. And he can come back and play for us next year at $12.5 million, or he can sit out. And, oh, by the way, Trent, if this doesn't work out with you negotiating your new contract, we may franchise you next year. You know, I would play hardball at this point to make sure that I get close to what I could have gotten had Bruce actually done the right thing and traded him a year ago, or traded him 9 months ago, or traded him 6 months ago. I would not be, you know, I would not be succumbing here to the less leverage situation because he's only got a year left on his deal and there are a bunch of tackles in the draft. I would be going for it. First of all, I'd ask Cleveland for their number one overall. I may not get it, but I'm not coming off a second and maybe, you know, a second and their third because they've got 2/3 as well. Go ahead, respond.
Yeah, I'm with you on the hardball angle. I mean, look, from the Redskins' perspective, what's the worst case scenario? Trent Williams doesn't play again. I mean, they would have the money on the books, and that would be problematic. Yada yada yada. Especially with already got Alex Smith. But you know, if you're Ron Rivera, I mean, okay. I mean, you know, Donald Penn, do we still have his number? Like, I mean, like, what are we gonna do? Like, okay, like we're not gonna just like give you away. And again, from their perspective, they don't have the emotional baggage that the previous group did, so I think they could look at it just more, you know, analytically and say, okay, well, this is what we want. We're happy to trade you at this point, but like, we're not going to give you away just to make your life better. We've got a situation here too. I think the second round pick, you know, I agree with you, and that's, like I said, that's the number that I was hearing last year. That's the number I've heard this year. My only hesitation with that is, I don't really quite know what to make of Trent Williams right now. I mean, he hasn't played since 2018. Obviously, he had the medical situation last year. I'm going to presume that that's in a better spot now with the helmet and fitting and all that. But, you know, we don't quite know what to make of him. So if you're another team, you know, I might be like, look, like, I don't know what to think of this guy. We'll give you a third, and we already have to give him an extension. He hasn't played, like, you know, look, and played chicken back with the Redskins. And to the role of Washington, look, a third is, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, relatively speaking, to having this thing just, like, play out again. So that would be my one wonder there. But, yes, I agree in a general sense. The second-round pick would be what I would be aiming for. Yeah, you could shoot for the moon if you want with some of these teams, but I would be aiming for that second. You mentioned the Cleveland one in sort of the top half of the round. I think that works. And, look, here's the reality. We've talked the last couple of weeks. Like, what are the Redskins going to do in free agency? They're going to go make a play for a cornerback like James Bradbury, Austin Hooper, the tight end from Atlanta, maybe the top tight end in this class, make a play on him. I think there's, you know, some talk out there. Could they go crazy on Amari Cooper? You know, they got to keep, you know, they got to keep Brandon Scherff at least on the tag. This is how we're thinking they're going to spend their money. Well, they now have to go get a tackle. They don't have a left tackle on this team. So how do you do that? Well, one way to do that is, in the draft, I don't think a second-round tackle is that is an automatic starter year one. But at the same point, like, there are some, if you get a pick in the top of that second round, there are some interesting tackles. It's possible one is still available there, and that could be the way to go. So, you know, this pick isn't just compensation back for Williams. You have to fill that hole, and, you know, that's going to be a very big way to do it.
You know, we've seen in the history of this draft major busts at tackle. You know, tackles taken very high and completely bust out. And I think that's where, you know, when you start thinking about teams that would want Trent Williams, a proven player. You know, by the way, the proven, we are assuming health here. We're assuming, sure, that they find a helmet that fits and that his head's okay and that he's healthy and that he has, you know, that people project that he's got another 3 years at high-level Pro Bowl caliber, you know, football. And so then you're talking, and you made a good point, you know, when I mentioned Miami initially, you know, you got to look at teams that actually think, you know, that they can contend. That's why somebody like Cleveland, who thought they could have contended last year, you know, Houston, even with Tunsil. And by the way, I meant to mention this when we were talking about Tunsil. I actually wonder whether or not they would look at keeping them both somehow, and playing one at left and one at right. But anyway, I don't want to get hung up on that. But a Buffalo, as an example, who's got a shitload of cap space and they believe they're a contender. You know, the Colts. I don't think I mentioned the Colts. You know, I don't know what happens with Costanzo if he makes it to free agency. They've got a lot of cap space. I think they're in the top three or four in available cap space, and I'm sure they think they should be a better team and potentially a contending team. Tampa, I don't know if we mentioned them. They have a bit of a need, and they've got a lot of cap space. So I just personally ultimately come back to this if I'm the Redskins. You know, when people were saying, let's just get Haynesworth out of here and end this, let's just get McNabb out of here and do right by him, that's not the way this works, you know, with you know, good franchises. You know, Mike Shanahan was able to get a fifth back for Haynesworth. He got a sixth back for McNabb. That became Alfred Morris. You know, you can't just let him walk here. Your risk right now, really, at $12.5 million for this upcoming year, where he's going to have to play, you know, isn't that great. You know, you can say, come back and play your ass off and get to free agency next year potentially, but we're not taking a third for you. We can get a third a year from now when you leave via free agency. I would be careful if I were them in just moving on, because I don't know that the downside of having him in the locker room, he's very popular, he's very well respected, he would have every motivation to play well. I think it's going to happen, Ben. I think they're going to trade him. I just would be very, very tough and play, you know, sort of hardball if I were the Redskins in terms of what I get back in this particular situation. What about players, being involved in a deal. Remember the Denzel Ward, you know, conversation? They also have Greedy Williams, who could have been a first-rounder last year, went in the second round from LSU, if we're talking about Cleveland. What about any players that you're hearing that could be involved in a Williams deal?
So here's the thing, and this is my thing on the Redskins all throughout this whole time, whether we're talking about Trent Williams, free agency, the draft, anything. We don't know what they're going, like, we don't know this group yet, right? I mean, Kyle Smith's a constant, but he's been elevated to a new position. Ron Rivera is completely new. So is Rob Rogers, the new Eric Schaefer sort of guy, the coaching staff. We don't know what their approach is. Rivera started to fill in a little more of the blanks about, you know, feel like they're willing to be aggressive in free agency, but I don't think they're going, like, all in necessarily. And you know, we still don't quite know what they want to do with a quarterback. And you mentioned, you know, what do we think about Quentin Dunbar's situation? So it's hard to know exactly what they'd be looking for. Also, football trades are weird sometimes when you're talking about players. Like the NBA, it's a little easier to say this guy for that guy for both salary cap and also position reasons. But there's so many positions on an NFL field, and you know, I'd be lying if I said I could tell you exactly what Cleveland's, you know, what they're thinking. For sure, they also have a new, you know, general manager there, and a lot of teams around the league have new pieces in play. So you know, it's just it's sometimes hard to figure out what you from a like what's a fair player. A fair player trade. I mean, if I'm Rivera, obviously look if there's somebody out there that's particularly of interest. Sure, I mean, let's talk. But I probably want as much sort of clean slate as possible, both in terms of cap relief, but also draft assets, so I can do what I want, not sort of take on somebody else's contract and so on. I mean, if ultimately some other team says, look, we don't have the pick for you, but if we've got a really good veteran player. You need this position. We've got this guy. What do you think? No, that becomes interesting, even if the player is maybe a little bit lesser value than Trent. But at the same point, yeah, I would imagine I would probably just want to hope to get as clean situation as possible, meaning cap relief and picks.
Yeah. It obviously it depends, and it's a really good point. We just don't know, you know, how they're going to operate. The last thing that I would mention and want your response on is in thinking about, you know, the possibility over a while now, over the last month anyway, you know, with this new group and having the second pick overall in the draft. I really hope that trading Trent, if and when it happens, doesn't influence what they do at number two. Meaning, you know, now the probability of a trade back has increased because, you know, they can get Jeff Okuda and they can then also get Andrew Thomas or an offensive lineman, you know, with, let's just say if it's Miami, with one of Miami's other two first round picks, and then they can pick up a tight end with, you know, Miami's second round pick if it's all part of the deal. Whatever, you know, whatever the deal would, I just don't, you know, I'm not a big draft for need person, and you know they have another need. Even though we like John Allen and Daron Payne and Matt Ioannidis and Montez Sweat and you know others, Chase Young, if he's the number one player on my board by a lot, I'm not trading back because I now have a left tackle need. I'll figure out a way to address left tackle. I mean, hell, I'll re-sign Donald Penn for another year if I have to do it. I'll sign, you know, I mean, Jason Peters at 37, 38 years old, is he going to get a big contract? I don't know if he's going to get a massive contract at that age. I can't imagine it's going to be that big. But my point is, overall, that I want you to respond to is, you know, a lot of teams do really take need into serious consideration. And the Redskins will have a need at left tackle if they trade Trent Williams. And you and I both have this sense that they believe they can turn this thing around quicker. Not that they don't have a long-term approach, but that they plan on trying to turn this thing around quickly with their cap space and making a splash in free agency. Respond to my thought of I don't want the loss of Trent Williams to influence what they do at number two.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, obviously, even before this Trent Williams situation came up, you know, one of the big topics of conversation has been what should they do with that pick? Should they keep Chase Young? Let's put aside the drafting and quarterback part.
But should they take Chase Young, or should they trade down and get a bunch of stuff? Because they do have other holes. And, you know, look, if you did trade down, you could easily get, you know, three picks, whatever it may be, and help a lot of ways. But if you weren't ready to do that before this, then I would hope this not would, like you're saying, I would hope this would not influence me to make that change. Look, if you were 50-50, you were weighing your options, you like Chase Young, but you think you can get Isaiah Simmons, Jeff Okuda, you know, some other pieces, and you're kind of cool with that, well, then maybe that is different. But if you're just, you know, if that's not the case, what you do. By the way, can I just a quick aside, Kevin? This is for the podcast. I just told you I was at Georgetown. So, like, I'm standing in the hallway. Patrick Ewing just walked out and just, like, kind of nodded at me, which is still bizarre to me. And then Dikembe Mutombo is walking right by me. Like, what year is this?
We can keep that. We can keep that in the podcast.
What year is this? This is bizarre. yes. But anyway, I'm with you. I would if they were in on Chase Young before this. This does not change anything. The one thing it could change would be how do you then fill that spot? You know, is it Donald Penn? I would certainly be at least checking in to see where he's at. Is he still, you know, down with playing and so on? And if not, then, you know, if you can get a second round pick for somebody, you know, it feels like this could be a year, like I said, where seven offensive tackles go in the first round or something like that. If you're lucky and somebody like an Austin Jackson from USC slips into the second, and you can grab him, maybe, again, he's not, you know, some of these guys won't be ready per se week one, but it's your best shot to fill the hole, you know, both short and long term. So, yeah, I wouldn't alter my plan if my plan was definitively we're taking Chase Young and that's it.
Yeah, I agree with that. What else do you have? I mean, we're 10 days essentially away from the beginning of being able to talk to, you know, people about contracts. And I think March 18th is the day everything starts to get announced, but March 16th is the day that everything starts to happen. You have any thoughts about, you know, sort of how they're going to approach this? This is up first. You know, Trent Williams is, you know, in the mix here to happen even before free agency. And by the way, you know, people have asked me about the timing of the Trent Williams thing. I think, you know, if it becomes obvious that there's more than one, two, three teams in the mix, if you're, you know, a team that wants to contend next year and you're deciding that it's not going to be the draft, you're going to want to act quickly. You know, you're gonna want to make this move, you know, at the beginning of the league calendar.
For sure. I mean, the draft is still 6-7 weeks away. You know,
right.
The free agency comes first, and you have to make some decisions. Also those tackles, like there could be four tackles off the board in the first
right.
12 picks or so, 11 picks, something like that. But that's conceivable at least. So if you're one of those teams who are at the bottom of the first round, a playoff, a team within the playoffs or you know, thinks you've got a shot, well, that, you know, I mean, you could still draft a tackle, but now all of a sudden you're taking a little bit more of a developmental project. Is that where you want to go when you think you're potentially one piece away? And, yeah, I mean, and like I said, the free agent market is not that robust. I mean, Jason Peters, I don't have the list in front of me. You know, maybe he's now like the best guy.
Hey, well, Costanzo, I just don't I just can't imagine that the Colts are going to let him, you know, get away. I know he's in his early 30s. He's sort of a Trent Williams aged guy, but, you know, he's a really good player. The guy in Tennessee, Conklin, I think, is a free agent. And then you got a lot of old guys, you know, except for Humphreys, who's, you know, already re-signed. So
our Colts writer, he said no on Trent Williams because he thinks they're going to keep Costanzo.
Yeah.
Conklin is potentially a player to get. But ultimately, it's, you know, it's one guy. It's sort of the way I'm viewing, like, the tight end class. We can talk about Austin Hooper. He's one guy, basically. If Hunter Henry's available, that's two. But, like, that's it. There's 32 teams. The Redskins are the only team wanting a tight end. Similar at the tackle, they won't be the only team. There won't be just one team who wants a tackle. The question, you know, of a tackle of Trent Williams' caliber, but the question is who's willing to go in and make something happen, and that's where it's going to get fun to see for sure. But it's going to be. I mean, look, it's the worst part about this Trent Williams thing so far for me is that the news came right as I was going to happy hour yesterday, so that was our massive buzzkill. Yeah, you know. What are you going to do?
What do you think will be number one on their list when free agency begins? Like, this is the position, this is the player that we've got to go get and get locked up right away.
Cornerback is sort of the obvious one, I think. I mean, it's the one I've been targeting the whole time, not even just because of the James Bradbury connection with Rivera and Carolina and all that, but because, you know, they obviously have a big need, and it is a free agent class, but there's some options this year. And, when you're going to spend a first-round pick on Chase Young, no second, that third-round pick feels like it could go to a tight end or a receiver, you know, how are you going to get corner help? Free agency seems like the way to go. So I don't know if it's definitively, like, day one, you know, first minute free agency, we have to get the corner locked up. But that, to me, is the obvious one. I think the position we've all sort of overlooked, to a degree, I'm not saying completely, is a three-down linebacker. Because Rivera has talked about this need, and the reality is, do they have one on the roster right now? I don't know that they do. I know they like Cole Holcomb, but, you know, I don't know if he's a three-down player at this point. Ryan Anderson, I think he's probably going to be better suited to be a 4-3 outside linebacker than he was when they had him on the edge here. But at the same point, I don't know if he's a guy you're having out there every play. The Reuben Foster situation remains unclear as to where he's at physically and so on. So I think I could see the Redskins making a splash play at linebacker as well. I'm not saying that would be the first thing they would do, but I think that's possibly something we just have not discussed as much relative to cornerback, tight end, and receiver.
Yeah. I've heard a little bit recently about just the addressing of safety in free agency, too. They obviously need another one next to Landon Collins. So we'll see. I mean, you got a guy like Anthony Harris out there who I thought was spectacular last year for the Vikings. He was essentially their best player in their secondary. But we'll see. Thanks for doing this. Get back to whatever you're doing down there on the hilltop with those Hoyas who've got a big one against Villanova tomorrow. And I'll talk to you soon.
If I see Alonzo morning, I'm going to I'll call you back.
Yeah. If you've got Morning, Mutombo, and Ewing all down there, you've hit the trifecta of the greatest in Georgetown history at that position.
Absolutely.
All right, man, see you, Ben. Ben Standing, everybody. Lots of interesting conversation. On the free agency front, we got all next week to gear up for free agency. My net on Trent Williams is this. I do think he'll get traded, and I do think the Redskins will ultimately get at least a second-round pick for him. And if that happens, I will say, and my position will be, they did okay, but they could have done a lot better had they been proactive. And it's sort of the last, you know, sort of parting, you know, gift, turd gift that Bruce Allen left us. There's no way you can convince me that the Houston Texans, with what they ended up giving up for Laremy Tunsil, wouldn't have given up half that, which would have equaled at least a first rounder for Trent Williams a year ago. Again, Bill O'Brien making all the calls there at the time, but I think that was a possibility, and I think there were others as well. Don't forget, we've got an app, all right? The Kevin Sheehan Show app, if you want to listen that way, and you can follow along that way. But the way you're listening now, if it's working for you, you know, you don't need to change that. Last thing on our list of things to talk about here is Maryland, Michigan, Sunday. Illinois lost last night, Aaron, which was good for us because that means Illinois is essentially out of the Big Ten race. The three teams tied atop the Big Ten right now are Maryland, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a noon tip tomorrow at Indiana, a game that they could definitely lose, although Wisconsin has been rolling. They're playing very good basketball. They've won 7 in a row. If Wisconsin gets a share of this league title, I mean, that's an unbelievable job by Greg Gard. Incredible job. There were games in which they looked non-competitive, you know, earlier in the year. I remember they got blown out at Purdue. They could barely score early in the year. They lost to teams like Richmond, another bad team or two early on in the year. Richmond wasn't a terrible team out of the A-10, actually. But I think they'll lose at Indiana tomorrow. And then Michigan State is the last, you know, games is after Maryland, Michigan on Sunday. I've already gone on the record. I think Maryland will beat Michigan.
Wisconsin went through a three-game stretch early where they lost to Richmond, New Mexico, and North Carolina State.
New Mexico was the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just went through it. If Wisconsin does win, not only do they get a share of the Big Ten title, they're the one seed.
Why? What'd they do against Michigan State?
They split with Michigan State. So, again, in the three group, it's their 2-1, Michigan State's 2-2, and Maryland's 1-2.
Yeah, because Maryland lost that heartbreaker at Wisconsin in Madison. I think there are a couple of keys for Maryland on Sunday against Michigan. I think you will see a better defensive effort. I think they're actually, in many ways, for Maryland, a little bit easier to guard. Now, Michigan can really shoot the three, and they can shoot the three with their big guys. You know, Mo Wagner's brother is really turning into a beast at Michigan. He's playing, pretty high-level basketball. In fact, I think it's Franz. Is it Franz Wagner, I think, is the brother who plays for Michigan. He's turning into a guy that you're going to see in the NBA, just like Mo. And then Teske can really shoot it too. So they got two big guys that can really shoot it and stretch the floor. Xavier Simpson's as good a playmaker in this league as anybody. And Livers is back and is playing well. He had 18 last night when they blew out Nebraska. They were a big favorite last night against Nebraska. They're not a deep team, Michigan. They play a lot of guys. They play more guys than Maryland does. But they're not exceptionally deep. I think perimeter defense will be key in this game. I think Maryland will play better defense. And don't give me will they come out ready to play? They'll be ready to play. They've been ready to play. They've just been playing some really good teams. Really, really good teams. I'll tell you what, though. You know, one thing you cannot overcome if you're Maryland, you can't overcome running decent offense, getting wide open shots like they had the other night, and going 6 for 32 from behind the arc. You know, one of the reasons you end up with 32 attempts, just understand this, is because you're behind by a lot and you end up shooting a lot. Now, they shot a lot in the first half. They were 2 for 16 in the first half. But you got to make shots. And Maryland's made more shots at home than they have on the road this year, which has, by the way, been a league-wide trend. I mean, see Ohio State, a team that shoots lights out at home, but not necessarily on the road. Big game for Maryland. It would be a major disappointment. I promise you, if they lose to Michigan at home on Sunday, no matter how it happens, I will be concerned on Monday about the team, okay? I'm not going to come in here and tell you what I told you after Rutgers, which is I expected the loss. I'm okay. I'm not majorly concerned. I'm telling you today, I expect them to win on Sunday. I actually expect them to win with some comfort score-wise. And then we'll come in here on Monday. We'll assess the Big Ten tournament, but they'll be right back on track to, you know, have, you know, be in that 2-3 seed discussion based on what they do next weekend. All right. And then, you know, at least in the moment, all will be better, Aaron. I do have a bet with one Richard Doc Walker. He doesn't think they're going to win another game. Now, he would only wager $10 on it, which for some people isn't really even a bet. But for others, it's significant. So I understand that. But Walker wasn't super confident about it. But we do have a bet. And I think Maryland won't win one more game. I think they will win several more games this year. All right, so that means several. What is several? Is several three,
I
or
think
more?
It's three or more.
Okay. So three or more could come in a lot of different ways the rest of the way.
If it's one win on Sunday, one win in the Big Ten tournament, and one win in the NCAA tournament, people aren't going to be very happy.
Not good. You know, if you told me it was only going to be three, I would say let's lose Sunday, lose in the Big Ten tournament, and win three to get to the Elite Eight get to the NCAA tournament. I hope it's a sold-out crowd, Sunday. It'll be a good crowd. I know it's 12 noon. I know the students, you know, when it's not a viral, you know, flash mob situation, don't get nearly as excited. But I hope the students really turn out for Sunday because it's big. You know, here's the thing, Aaron. You know, if they win that game Sunday, they're going to cut down nets at the end of that game.
Yes, they will.
They are going to cut down nets because they will have at the very least a share of their first Big Ten regular season title. All right. Thanks to Ben Standig for joining us on the show. Thanks, Darren. But just give me you didn't give me your prediction.
I think they'll win. I don't know if it's as comfortable as you think it is.
Okay. There we go. But you got them winning.
Yes.
Let's hope we're in here Monday talking about a Maryland win. Have a healthy, happy, safe weekend. All right. We're back on Monday.